This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
The night sky for July 2011. Well, I suppose the good thing for astronomers is that the nights are getting slightly longer. Actually, one effect of that is that the sky that we see soon after sunset stays sort of the same throughout the late summer and autumn, because as the stars move round a bit earlier by 4 minutes per day, that's sort of compensated by the fact that sunset gets a little bit earlier. So the same sort of things are visible. But what can we see? Well, the brightest star you'll see in the sky is Arcturus in the constellation of Bootes, and it's the second brightest star in the northern hemisphere, after Sirius, of course. Not a lot, actually, else in Bootes. Up to the left of Arcturus is a little circlet of stars called Corona Borealis. And over to its left, towards the bright star Vega in Lyra, is the constellation of Hercules. There are four stars at the heart of Hercules. They make up what is called the keystone because of its shape. And with binoculars or a small telescope, if you work your way up the right-hand side, you'll come across a rather fuzzy little object, which is M13, which is the best globular cluster that we can actually see in the northern heavens. Often overlooked, actually, just above the keystone of Hercules, is a second globular cluster called M92, and that's one that actually is also quite nice to look at and can be found more or less by scanning around to the west from Vega. Just mention that below Hercules is actually quite a large constellation, no really very bright stars. It's called Ophiuchus. It so happens that the Sun, in its passes around the sky, spends more time, I think, in Ophiuchus than it does in Scorpio. So perhaps it ought to be one of the houses of the ecliptic. But would you want to be an Ophiuchan, I wonder? Well, coming over to the east, fairly high up now, at about 11 o'clock in the middle of the month, we have the beautiful group of constellations, Cygnus the Swan with Deneb, its brightest star, Lyra with Vega, and Aquila with Altair. Those three bright stars make up what's called the Summer Triangle. And I'll come back to those with one of the highlights later on. And this, just down to the left of Cygnus, across from Altair, is a little rather nice little trapezium of stars with a couple more making a tail. It's actually Delphinus the Dolphin. That looks quite pretty in binoculars too. And just to say that all through the month, the moon is actually really at very low declination. It doesn't rise very high above the horizon. And so we do get this moon illusion that I referred to last month. When you see the moon near the horizon, it does appear to be much larger than when it's high up above us. Right, well, let's have a look at some of the planets. We'll start with Jupiter. It's a pre-dawn object, as it has been for a while, but in fact, by the end of July, it rises at midnight, so I suppose you could either get up early or stay up very late. And it'll have an elevation of about 50 degrees at dawn. In fact, Jupiter is actually coming up towards the upper part of the ecliptic, so it'll be relatively high in the sky over the next year or so, and that means it'll be good to observe. Angular size increasing a bit to about 40 arc seconds by the end of the month. And the small telescope will easily show you the equatorial bands and look to see if the south equatorial band has come back. It disappeared for a while last year. And obviously you'll pick out the four Galilean moons as they weave their way around it. So that's something nice to look for. Obviously, as the year progresses, you'll be able to see it in the late evening rather than having to wait up or get up early. Saturn, I've got in one of the highlights, but it's still actually visible in the evening sky soon after twilight. Because it's quite bright, if you've got a telescope, you can actually look at it before it gets fully dark, as I did, in fact, on the 19th of June, when the seeing conditions were absolutely perfect, and the view I had with my small 4-inch telescope was exquisite. I'll come back to that in one of the highlights, because it's very close to an interesting double star. The rings span about 35 arc seconds, roughly the same sort of size as Jupiter's angular diameter, but the actual disk is only about 17 arc seconds. And again, you will see some markings on the surface if the seeing is good, and also you should easily pick up the little moon Titan at magnitude 8. Even binoculars under very good conditions should pick out Titan. Mercury. Well, it's not really a good month. It's just visible above the northwestern horizon throughout the month, with the magnitude reducing down to about plus 0.7. It reaches its greatest elongation from the Sun, that's when it's furthest away in angle, on the 20th July. But even so, it will only have an elevation of 8 degrees at sunset. So it's not really a good month to observe it. We tend to see it best in the spring and the autumn, when the ecliptic, either at dawn or dusk, makes a nice angle to the horizon. So when it's furthest from the Sun, it's actually higher up in the sky. Perhaps have a look to see where the Sun sets on the horizon, and then look in the same basic direction about 45 minutes later to hopefully spot Mercury. Well, Mars is a pre-dawn object, but again, the ecliptic's at a fairly shallow angle to the horizon, so it's not terribly high. You want a good low eastern horizon and probably a pair of binoculars to pick it up. Magnitude is at plus 1.4. It's still only about 4 arc seconds across, which means you're highly unlikely to pick out any details in what's a rather lovely salmon pink disc. It does look quite pretty. It will have an elevation of about 29 degrees at sunrise, and it's moving, in fact, through Taurus, and it's now got, or will get to, very close to the boundary with Gemini. So something to look for, and I've come back to that at a highlight later on. Now, Venus passes behind the Sun on the 15th of August. Okay, that's next month. But it does mean, in fact, it's getting very close in angle. You might just glimpse it before dawn, low above the horizon in the east-northeast at the beginning of the month. Magnitude is quite bright at minus 3.9. And in fact, if you do spot it with a telescope, you'll see it's a virtually fully illuminated disk, 10 arc seconds across. Well, what about the highlights this month? Well, there's nothing particularly outstanding. We did, of course, last month have a total eclipse of the moon, but it was totally cloudy across, I think, virtually the whole of the UK, as these things sometimes happen. Well, I've already mentioned Saturn, but I'd like to make the point that it's actually close to a lovely double star called Porrima, or Gamma Virginis. On June the 10th, it was actually only 15 arc minutes away, and it looked lovely in a wide field, not that wide field actually, view with a telescope, the two, Saturn and Porrima together. But the point is this, that if you have a night of good seeing, and in fact when I observed it on the 19th of June, it was absolutely perfect, even a small telescope, and mine was only 4 inches in aperture, will split Porrima into two equal doubles. You see two stars, and if the seeing's good, you'll see a little central blob surrounded by some circular rings. It's called an airy disk, and you see these two overlapping airy disks. And it's a lovely sight to see, actually, and I would recommend it if you have got a small telescope. Easy to find, find Saturn, and then up a bit to the right to find Porrima. The rings this year, actually, of Saturn have been getting slightly narrower in angle. It's because of the changing motion of the Earth around the Sun. But they're now opening out again and will continue to do so. So when we see Saturn again in its next apparition, we'll see gradually more and more of the rings visible. And some of the features, like Cassini's division, will be easier to see. I mentioned the summer triangle. There are two things, I think, just to look out for. Binoculars or possibly a small telescope will help. If you follow from Altair up to Vega, about a third of the way, you'll come across a little asterism called Brocky's Cluster, or the coathanger, because it looks just like a little coathanger upside down. If you go to the Night Sky website, just put Night Sky into Google, then you'll find a little map showing you precisely where it is. But if you go up to the left from Brocky's Cluster, you'll come to the star called Albireo. It actually makes the head of Cygnus the Swan. It's not nearly as bright as the other stars, really, that make up the main part of Cygnus, of which the major form what's called the Northern Cross. So, in fact, Albireo forms the base of the cross. if you have got a small telescope, it's well worth looking at it because it's a most beautiful double star. One is much brighter than the other, I think third magnitude and then fifth, but it has a beautiful amber sort of orangey color, whereas the other is blue-green. And it's probably the most beautiful double star that we can observe in the sky. So do try and have a look. Dawn, July the 27th, towards the end, I sometimes try and indicate what might be a nice skyscape. There'll be a very thin crescent moon with Jupiter and Mars in the pre-dawn sky. So you have to look east-southeast about 40 minutes before sunrise. And that may be nice. Hopefully it'll be clear. You'll also spot, in the same field, the Pleiades cluster above and the Hyades cluster, which will be just above to the right of Mars. So that'll be a nice thing to look at if it's clear. Finally, around the summer solstice, and we've just gone through that, it's a very good time to spot what are called noctilucent clouds. They're also known as polar mesospheric clouds. And you see them in the north in the deep twilight. The point is that when you're at this sort of latitude, or preferably even further north, the sun doesn't get that low above the northern horizon, and its light can actually light up these incredibly high clouds. They're about 80 kilometres or 50 miles high. Normally they're too faint to be seen, but they're visible when illuminated by sunlight from below the northern horizon. So that's something to look out for. They're not fully understood. They seem to be more common now than they were, and nobody quite knows why. Some people think it might be due to climate change. So that's something. If you've got a clear night and you're up at around midnight, look to the north and see if you see some slightly blue scattered clouds. Have a good month.